Hello, I'm John Costa, and I'm with my colleague Rob Watson, and we're here on Spotlight on Art this week. How are you, Rob?
I'm very well, thanks, John.
Cool. We always talk about the weather when we start, and it is miserable outside.
It's not too bad. It's spring. The lichen is very bright and vibrant on the trees, and the buds are coming through.
Sorry, the last recording I did was about a Cockney babble bubble with my mum for the Modern Cockney Festival, so I'm channeling myself, which is the weather's miserable because the sun's not out. Anyway, so our guest this week is, I don't know, I think I'm calling him a friend. I'm not looking at him while I'm saying that. Maybe he's maybe raising his eyebrows, but local filmpreneur, I think, is a really good one. Filmmaker, entrepreneur, I think, all-round good guy. Known you for a long time there. Andy Gundelach, how are you?
Very well, John. Yes, I think we're friends. I think we've known each other. Right? I think it's wild. We've actually have known each other for quite some time. I still remember that first ever conversation we had.
Oh, good Lord. What did I say?
It was more about opening doors. And just we're sitting down, we had a beer and we sat about talking about Leicester and vision. And yeah, the mill conversation came about. Yeah. Still remember it to this day.
Yeah. I always remember mentioning you and the guys at Created by 10, because you guys knew each other from uni, didn't you? Some of you had done like media production and stuff like that. And when I was teaching creative media entrepreneurship, and with Rob as well, teaching communication arts at DMU, I remember saying to the students, you know, what are you doing while you're at uni? You're doing your coursework, but what are you creating that you're not getting a mark for? So, because someone like Andy and his colleagues sit there, you know, there's three of them. They're looking to grow their company by 25%, add someone else extra. And you bring your portfolio along and Andy goes, yeah, I did that course. Yeah. God, are they still doing that? Is it the same teacher still getting you to do the same thing? What did you do? Show me something you didn't get a mark for. And that I got that from you, that kind of inspiration about why you're there. You can't just do your coursework. You've got to do other stuff. How have you found students from DMU that have come to you for these work placements that they do with you? Or do you find that they're doing it because they think it's the right thing to do? Or do you think they're really trying to add to their portfolio beyond what they're doing at uni?
Good question. I think initial kind of conversations we're getting involved with the university, I think there's a stigma around students that there's, you know, the laziness, the attitude. But to be honest with you, every single cohort we've had come in to work with ourselves in Film Leicester, they've been great. I think they know that it's not just education you need to get out into the real world and get a real job. You need to have that real work life, you know, experience. And yeah, you can train the skills that you being educated with the skills, but you need to go out, meet people, have conversations, get a better understanding, and see different lenses and viewpoints of other people within the world. And I think it's that blended learning that people need to have, because I think sometimes, I don't know, you know, my opinion is that it can be quite sort of siloed at university, and I think it needs to be. You need to go out there and have more experiences.
Mm. It's interesting because you talk to them as well. They've got this vision, something like a linear vision of things they've done, you know, GCSE, A level, or college, you know, BTEC, and something. And then they go through university, and then they kind of pop out to you, and it's like, I know I really want to do this, and you go, but where did that come from? That doesn't sound or fit with what you're saying to me. This is almost like you're on someone else's pathway. And I think I always found the best students were the ones that suddenly decided, this is what I'm interested in. I'm on this course, but this is what I'm interested in rather than that.
I think they're the lucky ones, John. I think the ones that are really assured they know exactly what they want to go in the field. I think sometimes the challenge is the ones that maybe feel that they belong in the creative space, but they haven't really found their core skill is.
Or their role within
their
that
role,
space.
Yeah, and I think it's that safe environment to explore their creativity and to, yeah, be okay to make mistakes. And if try something, say, I'm interested in it, but I don't know what it entails. So try it and then go, actually, you know what, that's not for me. My skill sits here. And I think as you gain more experience going out and working and on projects and productions and different businesses, I think you have a bit more of a clearer idea of, like, actually, I'm really good at organising. I think I'm probably more suited to be more of a managerial producer. You know, I'm talking film specifically now, rather than a technician that's school-based and I'm editor or cameraman. For me, like, I'm always slightly envious of some of the students that are I want to do this. This is what I want to do. And it's like, okay, awesome. That's very, very clear. But it's, I probably came from the background of maybe someone that didn't necessarily know exactly what I was doing, but I was still trying to work out what my strengths were, because I guess I had a bit of a broad set of skills that I was good at, but really wanted to focus on this particular area.
You're listening to John Coster and Rob Watson on this week's Spotlight on Arts on Source Sound with our special guest, Andy Gundelach. So Andy, what's your earliest memory of doing something that you would consider creative?
So earliest memory, I mean, at primary school, I loved art, I loved painting watercolours, I loved building things. I still remember to this day, mum and dad bought me everyone had Lego, they bought me Kinects, and you'd be there, like build the towers or the leggy bands. But yes, I've always liked the creative practicality of things and just building something from nothing. I've always had that.
And where do you think your interest from film came? I don't mean just like watching film, but I mean, when did you then think to yourself, actually, I want to make a film or pick a camera up, whether that's in front of it or behind it or tell other people how to do it?
It's so strange, because I was thinking about this the other day, and I was thinking, okay, so my dad was a drama teacher, and as part of his, you know, teaching the students, he had to, you know, film the performances, and he used to have a camera laying about, and I'd see it, pick it up, stop filming stuff, and then start inviting my friends around to come up with little stories and plays, and on the back of watching films that we enjoyed, and just make a really random rubbish. And it just developed from there. I think I just had a passion. I love films. I love watching. If it wasn't going to be football, because I was really into my football, I wanted to get involved in films and how they're made, and just fascinated how things are put together.
I mean, you see, I like watching all the extras on DVDs about, you know, the making of and all that. And I remember this watching this one about J.J. Abrahams, just saying about him and his mates were always like making films and stuff like that. And I think him and his mates got some gig to digitize or do something with all the archive from Steven Spielberg and stuff. And so he'd got into it through just being there. And I think sometimes you have to kind of encourage young people just to get out and do something. Stop waiting for it to be perfect. Just make something. And, you know, and again, you can always then look at things they've made in the past and go, at that point there, some adult came to you and said, don't do it this way. If you want a career in this, change what you do. Now you need to go back to that bit and just carry on doing that. Some adult gave you some bad advice. How do you find the students are when they come to you, or anybody coming to you to do any kind of work experience and stuff? Are they set on this journey that someone else has put them on, or are you undoing a lot of bad work, given good bad advice given to them by other people?
You know what, we've had a breadth. I think when we bring them into, you know, when we brought them on, we've got obviously like we've had a 6-week program with them, and some of the students have got a strong skill set, and they're very confident in what they're doing. But on a baseline level, someone just need they just need confidence. They want to feel like they belong. And for me, having that journey from week one to week six, and to see that they do belong in this, you know, in this industry, is a win. So it, you know, every creative is different. Every creative process is different. Every creative person's journey is different. And I think it's just getting really a good understanding of that individual and what makes them tick, and dig a little bit deeper and find, yeah, what is that spark they're looking for? And also say, don't worry. If you don't know what you want to do just yet, you'll get there. If you don't have to know that right now, you might know in 10 years. You know, people start their creative careers when they're 40 plus, 50 plus, you know. Alan Rickman's always that one that comes to my head, where, you know, I think it was graphic designer by trade, who actually started his acting career when he was 40 plus. His first major film was Die Hard. You know, Ricky Gervais, another one where, you know, he kept plugging away. I think he's that mantra. I think I remember seeing a quote saying, you know, I started my career when I was in my mid 40s or something along those lines. So yeah, I think it's just letting people know they don't put time against yourself, because every journey is different. And for me, the students, yeah, we've had really varied different ones. It's just really getting a bit of deeper understanding what their motivations are and how we can help them get to where they want to get to. Unfortunately, like I said, 6 weeks is often not enough. It's like after four and a half weeks, it's like it's dropped, the penny's dropped, and it's like, okay. And we hope that they've got like a bit more of an understanding now of like, this is what the real world is. This is not like, for example, students are kind of sheltered within that environment at being at university. And I think it's really, really, really important we do give them that blended education, real world life experience, because it works vice versa.
You're listening to John Costa and Rob Watson on the Spotlight on Art show on Source Sound Radio with our special guest, Andy Gunnelect. So picking up on that point you were saying there, Andy, do you think that the 38-year-old version, if you were to bump into the 21-year-old graduating version of yourself, you would recognise yourself? Do you think the 21-year-old would recognise the journey that you've been on as a 38-year-old?
Oh, this is deep. This is deep, John. Who knows these podcasts are going to be like this? This is a... I think for my own personal journey, running a business and working with lots of different people, I've learned so much over these past 10 years about myself. And if I was that 21-year-old looking at me now, I'd snap your hands off and go, I want that job. And I think it's good to reflect on that sometimes, the gratitude of going, actually, we're doing okay. Would I recognise that 21-year-old? Probably. I'd definitely be one to support that person for sure, just to tell them, don't worry.
Would you like him if he turned up on a 6 weeks placement for you?
Yeah, I think I would. From what I know now,
would you understand him, as in where he was coming from and what he was looking to
achieve? Yeah, I would. It's so strange because, like, it's working with different types of students, different types of people. Yeah, like I say, it's just having that real good curiosity and connection of understanding where they want to go to. So I think having a 21-year-old me would, I'd love to have him around. But just to give that, like I say, just that bit more guide and that arm around the shoulder to go, yeah, don't worry, it's all right.
Is there an individual that you can remember? And Rob and I enjoy having these kind of conversations as well, but is there anybody that you remember at a particular moment when someone just said something to you that was just really not supportive or didn't really understand what you were doing, but you should just carry on doing that because you actually look quite happy? I always remember Anton Levi-Amu was our very first Spotlight on Arts, Rob, wasn't he? Conversation with Anton, and he said that it was his next door neighbour who, he used to show his artwork to him. It's just, Anton, you should carry on doing that. That's really cool. And he actually said that was his person. It was his next door neighbour. He came from a really busy household and his neighbours was quite a quiet space and therefore it was quite good. Do you remember that, Rob? Because that was quite an interesting point when he made that, didn't he?
Yeah, often it's not. It's not
a teacher.
We have this dreadful thing, I think, which is kind of put into schools, is about role models, and that you've kind of got to identify with somebody as like a heroic figure. So you get Gandhi and
J.J. Abrahams.
And most of the time, and it's you selling this kind of dream and fantasy, but actually what really facilitates a lot of this is that mundane, that person who lent you the camera. And, I remember for me, he was getting into photography because there was a guy in the shop in Dixon's that I worked with, said, he had a dark room at home and, showed me how to use it. And, it was just that small, mundane, practical thing.
Someone took you under their wing and just kind of showed you. Yeah. So Andy, anybody in particular stands out to you?
It's funny. I think, like I said, running a business is been a massive roller coaster, and I'm sure you probably can aware of that your career running businesses.
Mate, that's why I'm crying at this particular moment. No, because I'm going.
I think because you work on other people's projects and you kind of get disconnected away from actually who you are, your core values. And I think in recent times, maybe it's me. My son being born, I feel like I want to get a little bit more connected to myself, and I've been on this bit of a self-review, and understanding my values, etc., and then just digging a bit deeper in terms of like who the people, who do I admire, etc., and just trying to think about who it's like. Okay, for example, it's really hard when your parents are you put them on a pedestal and they go, oh, you can do everything. But sometimes it's like, you don't really take it.
That's not helping.
It's not helping because as much as they're your parents, and you know, you kind of has a level expectation of them to give you those types of comments, it's kind of because they're not within that space, or maybe they've not set up their own businesses, etc. It's hard to kind of take that as truth. But people, you know, honest, I just even remember it, like one of your comments in terms of back in the day when you and Tina sat down with me, that was something about, you know, when we're at the table and saying, you guys, you know, keep doing, and is it the giants, what's that phrase you said, giants on the rest on your shoulder,
resting on the shoulder of giants.
Yeah. And so it's little anecdotal things to kind of give you a bit of a guide to know heading in the right direction. And I've always been someone that's tried to have mentors or trying to guide me and knowing that actually I'm on the right path. And like I said before, every person's journey is different. You know, I've had one, you know, I've had people in previous businesses, organizations I've worked in, and they've said, yeah, you're good at this, you can do that. It's like, great, fantastic. And it's, which have kind of spurred you on, but within this industry, even just the most recent one, which was really nice to hear, was we worked on the Lost King, which came to the city for 4 days. And Sally Perkins, the lead, her taxi driver pulled me to one side because she's had a private car, took her around, and he said to me, Sally just wants to say something to you. Do you want to have a chat with her? I was like, yeah. And Sally said, I've seen you working. I said, you've got a bright future ahead of you. And I was just like, okay, right.
Yeah, you're busy working. You don't see that, do you?
I was like, yeah, just the way you kind of conduct yourself and how you work with people says, yeah, just keep doing what you're doing. And I was like, wow, okay. I didn't expect that. Yeah, great, fantastic. And it's that was that was really nice for someone that's, you know, worked on some big films. You know, my missus, again, there's probably a bit too much skin in the game, but I think she's one of the most, she is the most honest person I know. And she's kept me on the straight and narrow, and she tells me how it is. And, you know, I really listen to her, and she kind of points me in the right direction. There's tough question to ask, I guess.
So this is John Costa and Rob Watson on Spotlight on Arts. And this week, our special guest is Andy Gundelecht, and we're talking about film and things and stuff. And I want to move on to leadership now. Okay. Now, I remember when I was about 12 or 13, and some people find it very hard to believe that know me, as I have a citizen's eye, or John Costa. I was very shy, very quiet. Yeah. And my brother started secondary. Thank you. And my brother came home from secondary school. He'd just joined the first year. I was going into the fourth year, and they were setting up the Sea Scout troop again. And he went for a couple of weeks. I had no interest in it at all. And they came home and he said, if we don't get an older boy who's in charge, to be in charge, then we've got to close the troop because we're all first years. We need an older boy. And I remember going along and I was just literally dropped in charge of like all of these, I was about 12, well, it was probably about 40 of them, I think. It was 34 of them. And from that day forward, I've always taken on a leadership role because I think leadership then didn't become about age. So when I was in the army, I was the youngest section commander in the battalion, but everybody in my section was older than me. So you had to kind of lead by example rather than you could just be in charge because you were the eldest. And I think for me, then doing events and all the things that I do and all the things I do with Rob, it's always about, well, let's set it up if there's no one doing it and stuff. So when you were thinking about setting up your own business and being in business, is that something that you can remember coming from being younger, which is, I want to be in charge, I want to make those decisions? Is it something that you got from your uni course doing media production, thinking to yourself, actually, I could set up my own production company rather than work from anywhere else? How did you get to running your own business? Good questions, aren't they?
Really good question.
You're going to regret saying you're coming on the podcast.
No, not at all. It's great. No, it's serendipitously, like I said, I'm doing this a bit of a self-review of myself at the moment. So it comes in. It's almost like it's meant to be, John. It's meant to be. I don't know. I don't think it was a conscious decision. Oh, I want to set up my own business. When that happened was because I was working in London at the time. I'd left my job in finance because I wanted to get back into the industry that I was passionate about. And I was working on all sorts of freelance projects for absolutely nothing. And then I got the internship at a production company. And well, they learnt the ropes, and I suppose I just, there was some disagreements, I think ethical disagreements, and just, you know, when your gut when something doesn't add up. And I felt in that time, like, actually, I know probably the mechanics of how it kind of works now.
Let me dive in there as well, because it's not about doing it better than them. No. It's about you would do it differently.
Yeah. Yeah, it was
to me, that's what ethics is. It's not about you're wrong. No. It's more about you should be doing it this way.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not going to go into the detail, but it was doing it differently. And it was more so on the fact of just working with people and giving them a fantastic experience and building that team mentality. And it was just so happened, literally on the way, I was leaving London and coming back to Leicestershire at that point, and I got a phone call from a friend that I met at university and said, I've been seeing you've been doing work. Would you be interested in working on a project with us? And I was doing an R in where to set up a business. Really was. Until friends and family said, you know, you're more than capable of doing it. Just give it a go, see how you get on with it. And then one project down, and almost 10 years later, we're, you know, business still here. I'm sat with you doing a podcast.
Yeah, yeah. So tell me briefly, what's your 20, 30 second elevator pitch for what is Film Leicester? Which is a project that, you know, obviously some people will know you for rather than your business, but, you know, there's a link there. Yeah.
I'm going to be biased to Leicestershire. I think from living here that long and even talking to you guys, there's something here that is almost like there's a bit of a melter. There's a burning desire to make something happen here. And I think it feels like for me, we've got just a great opportunity. You know, we've got really talented freelancers, businesses, agencies that are producing fantastic content, or either from Leicester have gone afield or have been educated in Leicester or from Leicester have gone elsewhere. And I feel like, why are we not part of the conversation of attracting larger productions to come to the city? You know, we talk about being a creative county. We talk about having a very multi-diverse culture with lots of different voices and perspectives. We should be celebrating that and telling people about that. And I'm pretty sure there's so many more people and so many more stories that could be told and should be told to the world.
So building on that, you know, there's an opportunity here for Leicester and Leicestershire to be involved in, you know, hosting big productions, you know, of all the buildings, the people, places and events, the amazing stuff that's gone on here over the last 2,000 years. Why did you set it up? Because you don't need to. You're running a business. You know, you're doing it. You're really, really busy, because Rob and I laugh about these things all the time. Why would you then go and set something up completely different, which actually involves almost trying to convince people? And I've sat in on some of your talks and things that you've done with Alex, and you've been talking to people. And I look around the room and I'm like, this is so logical. Why are there still some people going, oh, I'm not quite sure? You know what I mean? How do you keep yourself motivated when it comes to doing something like Film Leicester?
I guess I'm an all or nothing kind of person. I think just experiences of my own personal needs growing up and wanting there to be a real sort of foundation of creativity or community to be a sense of belonging. There's been groups that have happened over the years here locally and disbanded for X, Y, and Z reasons. But I just feel like we've got a real opportunity to build something really fantastic here. Yeah, you're right. If I you're asking me about why would I set up another organisation for?
I mean, I know if you find a busy person, they're the person you ask because they're the ones that will make the time if they see the vision. But I mean, at the end
yeah,
of the day,
I think it just feels right. It's a no brainer. It really is a no brainer. We've got all the component parts, and I think it's trying to change. It's that mentality shift to know that actually we have got. Yes, there's things we haven't got, but we can work towards that. You know, we have got the people, we have got the places, we have got the projects or the stories, and it's about having a much better understanding, digging a little bit deeper and making it more visible to not just even, we talk about globally, and that's like that's the end goal vision. But I think it's even just, it's even more locally, and let people believe that we actually have something here to fight for. And I'd love to be a part of that conversation. Because that were Leicester on the map.
Because the more you kind of get involved in the things like Rob and I do, like the heritage fairs and, you know, having conversations like, you know, some of the conversations Rob had on Saturday at the Heritage Hub, you know, you suddenly realise that it's only when you take the time to go out and meet other people and say, this is what I'm interested in. They go, oh, I know someone who does that. I mean, some of the conversations you had on Saturday, Rob, weren't they? At the Heritage Hub, you know, Civic Society and all the organisations and people, you can listen to this podcast that Rob's created last Saturday, next week when it goes out on Monday. You know, I mean, some of the conversations you had, just different stories and that.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to hear you kind of say about local stories, and there's a thing at the moment about the Netflix program Adolescence, which has caught an awful lot of attention, and there's an awful lot of people, and it'd be really like to know how this fits with your thinking of we need to pump prime the television drama industry with lots more money so it compete with Netflix. Now, I'm almost totally opposed to that idea. I think we should go back to small-scale, studio-based television in a studio or a couple of people wandering around with a camera. I think there's other ways of doing this, because what we've got is a television industry in the UK that's chasing Amazon, Netflix, Disney, and it's chasing the global markets. And what we've done in the meantime is hollowed out. All we've got is soap operas. And everything has to have this kind of high-standard film-type production view, and it seems to me that you're kind of saying there's somewhere in the middle that needs attention.
I think they both have a place. I mean, I'm coming from a commercial. It's a real fine balance, Rob.
I buy a lottery ticket, you know, it's £200 million, the EuroMillion soon. Yeah. It'd be great. I'd love to win that. Yeah. But do you know what makes the biggest difference when people get £10 and £20 here and there, a couple of £100 there and there, and we're hyper focused on winning the jackpot, the big jackpot, and in the meantime, we don't pay any attention to the kind of smaller stuff.
No, I agree. I do agree. I think there's definitely a lot more work to be done. I think from my perspective, I suppose these big streaming platforms with the, you know, the big ticket items, if it was something that we could get a Leicester story that tells about Leicester people, I think that's something that we can be proud about. I think that's an opportunity to then focus, you know, not saying we should not focus on the smaller stories. I think we should always continue smaller stories, but it's about, you know, making that real bold awareness about what Leicester people are, what the, you know, the background, the history, I suppose what the vision is. And then it's like, okay, we have a understanding of what Leicestrians, is that a word? Leicestrians. And it's, again, digging deeper and finding out what are those other unique stories that are out there and really grounded. You mentioned smaller stories. I don't think the smaller stories. I think there's lots of smaller stories that could uncover some really big, bold ideas. I think it's trying to get that right balance and building, like I think earlier you said, one of the mantras for Leicester, Film Leicester, is about connecting those dots and linking people up together and making almost that connection really stronger to amplify those, you know, the smaller stories that could potentially get a bigger audience. So I think it works both. I think it works both sides. As much as I'm looking from probably another conversation of the day, but Leicester in itself is trying to bring more money into the city and county. It's like, how do we generate that? And we need to be more visible. And yes, we can keep telling about the smaller stories, but I think it's looking at, like I said, striking that fine balance of, in the abbreviated quotations, you know, big hitting projects or something that's on a streaming platform, but underpinned by really solid, truthful, to the ground stories as well.
So Andy, final section now. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate you taking the time coming on. So 10 years time, when the 10-year-old version of you is now looking back at this version of you, you've just been very honest in the last half an hour talking about that you're going through this reflective period about what you've done so far and where you are at your life and stuff like that. What advice?
It's not a midlife crisis. I just want to get that clear. It's not that at all. It's things happen for a reason. Great believer in that.
There's no such thing as a midlife crisis. I think it's only if you buy a motorbike. If you've got a crazy to buy a motorbike, it's a midlife crisis. Yeah. So what do you think is the most important thing that you're doing at the moment with this self-reflection? Is it going off and talking to different people about you? What do you think I'm doing? Am I doing the right thing? You know, what do you see? Or is it something that you're just doing it internally, reflectively? Because I feel like Rob and I are therapists in our own way, really, with this podcast.
I think it's just, it's, you can always want to work on yourself. There's growth. It's just taking an honest and holding that mirror in front of your face. And there's things, you know, you're not perfect. And I remember reading a lot of books, you know, Brené Brown's The Gifts of Imperfection and knowing we're all humans at the end of the day. I know that, you know, I've struggled with, you know, low self-esteem, and it's something that I want to work on. I mean, to the outside, people might not think that, but it's,
I'm shocked,
it's true.
About that, actually. Yeah, I'm quite shocked about that.
And it's, I think it's just been, again, looking at, okay, why, you know, why have I felt in those moments, and having a bit more belief in kind of the vision, and knowing that actually I've done all this so far. Just keep going. You know, you've learned a lot, and you've becoming a little bit more clear on that roadmap and end goal. And I think that's what it is. It's just the grey cloud of the roller coaster of running the business and understanding people, understanding clients, understanding yourself. Is there's nothing there now.
I often say that business is a roller coaster, because if it was that easy, the people that tell you you should set up a business would have a business themselves.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know what? It's so strange you saying that, because I was on the way here thinking that is, yeah. If John was to ask, would you advise someone to set up their own business? And I'm kind of sat on the fence with it, because I've learned, for me personally, I've learned so much about myself.
I think you learn
so
more.
Hard. Yeah.
It's not
hard.
What you do; it's what you learn.
Yeah. It's not, I guess it's not for everyone, otherwise everyone would do it. But for me personally, I've learned so much about myself, for sure. Yeah. And I wouldn't have, you know, there's a lot of things you've got to take gratitude for, that, you know, I've met my future partner, I've got kids, you know, it's and I worked on, I'm really lucky to work on some really fantastic projects. And now there's a lot more clarity in terms of the direction now of where I'm or we're heading.
Yeah. Okay. So this evening, what are you going to go home and watch? Will you watch something on mainstream? Will you watch something on a streaming channel? Will you watch a DVD? Will you listen to a podcast? Or will you do none of that?
You know what? I will be doing none of that this evening, because I have got a catch-up with an old friend I haven't spoken to for some time. And I'll be putting my little one to bed. I'll be going out, having a catch-up with him. And probably as soon as I get back, I'll be heading straight to bed. Maybe read a book. Just to get myself.
And when you meet up with this old friend,
yes,
will you be turning around and saying, I'm going through a self-reflection period, let me get you a beer and then think about how I can do better? Is it one of those reflections?
No, not at all.
Oh, he's not part of your therapy, then that's
all right. No, not at all.
As long as you're enjoying yourself.
No. It's someone we went to school with, and, you know, works within kind of the marketing industry, but I literally haven't seen him or had a conversation with him. Well, I saw him when I was driving home, and he was riding his bike, and I was like, that, I need to catch up with him. So I haven't spoke to him in quite some time, and I need to make more of an effort to reach out and have more conversations and chats with people. Okay. Connection's massive.
So Andy, thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
Great.